All right, we're going to get started.
You're assertive.
Thank you. I call this meeting to order, Public Health and Social Services, for July 8th. The first order of business today is I move that the committee allow myself, Abe Uchitel, to act as chairman for today in the absence of the...
I'll second that.
Thank you. In absence of the chair and deputy chair. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
So okay. Thank you.
Very good.
I know.
That's okay. That's cool.
It's a quorum. All right. Can I hear a motion to approve the minutes from the June 3rd meeting?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Any discussion on the minutes from last month's meeting?
Nope.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining? All right. Passes. Our first agenda item is we have David McNamara from Samadhi, which, shout out, is a great organization that's in my district, the 5th Legislative District, so always cool to have a hometown organization with us. And David, I'd like to turn the microphone over to you to give us a little presentation about some of your work.
Thank you, Abe. I appreciate it. So I'm David McNamara. I'm the Executive Director of the Samadhi Recovery Community Outreach Center. And what that means basically is we're a peer-based organization. All of our peers are certified by the state, and we actually go through a training to become certified. We are an open-door center, so basically anyone who is struggling with any type of substance use disorder, any type of mental health challenge, the door is open. Right now we're open about 16 hours a day, Monday through Saturday. We offer, you know, basic needs. Because quite often having someone's basic needs met are really the first thing that they need before they want to talk about recovery or something like that. So we have showers, we have food, we have, you know, a place to sit. It's cool in the summer and warm in the winter. What has happened over the last 8 months, or really during the pandemic, since we are an open door, one of the few open doors, we are, the outreach part of our center became very, very busy. We probably, you know, quadrupled the amount of people that were coming in. I think we served over 1,700 unique individuals in the past year. And we started to see clearly that we needed to expand. We needed to separate our recovery services from our, you know, from our outreach center, because the need was so great for the outreach center that we decided to do that. So we have started into, well, I guess it was, it's phase two. Phase two of our project was to open a separate outreach center, as we are opening an OASIS certified outpatient center at our current location at 122 Clinton Avenue. So we had a plan to open a separate outreach center. The need became so great that we decided that it should be a 24/7 outreach center. And it so presented itself that we were able to also add transitional housing, which was going to be a third phase, but we're kind of doing the second and a little bit of the third phase together. So that's a little bit of what we wanted to talk about today, was that, you know, that transition from being a recovery and outreach center in one facility, and then expanding out into these two separate facilities. We currently, I think, on average, we, you know, we're serving about 220 people a month, and I don't think that number is going to go down. I think it may go up, actually, especially once the new location is 609 Broadway, so it's pretty centrally located. It's a couple doors over from UPAC, and within this facility, what we've done, currently we employ 11 certified recovery peer advocates. And we have a medical director, Dr. Maya Hambright, and our board president, Kathy Nolan, is also a doctor. And then we also have three of us that are CASACs as well, certified addiction substance abuse counselors. So so basically, in moving into this new center, we probably have to increase our staff substantially. Probably, I'd say, I mean, double would be great, but 50% would be ideal. we are looking to build out the residential units, the respite or transitional housing. We're kind of going back and forth on whether it's supposed to be called residential, whether it's supposed to be called transitional housing or respite housing. We're actually in talks with Michael Iapozzi to figure out what the correct terminology is. Those units will be done by August 15th. But the rest of the build out of the center, we're probably going to do in stages, just from a funding perspective. So some of what we have planned for the outreach center is we have made an agreement with Maverick Psychotherapy here in Kingston, and basically they will have an office. One of our three therapy rooms will be dedicated to Maverick Psychotherapy, so we'll have four therapists available for 8 to 10 hours a day. We also work with MHA. We have a contract with MHA, so they're going to have a staff person in our facility, I think 20 hours a week. They said 18, we're trying to get 20. So a lot of the folks that we work with are homeless and work with the ACT program with MHA. In the past, because we're members of SPOA, there are a number of individuals that SPOA has had a hard time finding, and we started to realize that they were all at Samadhi. So we started to talk to SPOA and MHA about actually having somebody in-house and sending the ACT team there. We also have the clinical director of Samaritan Village in Ellenville is working with us 6 hours a week. So, you know, folks who are looking for, you know, for long-term treatment, you know, there's nobody better to talk to them about it than somebody who actually has been doing it for 14 or 15 years. We've referred, I think we've referred over 500 people into residential treatment in the past year. Mostly 28-day programs, but I think about 25% of that is probably long-term. It's harder to convince people to go into long-term treatment. We also are working with Arms Acres. Eric Dentrone is going to be at our facility, I think, 6 hours a week. Because, you know, what we find is a lot of phone tag when we place people into treatment. So having him there, he can work on insurance, he can work on placement. So it just kind of, again, cuts the barrier. So we're trying to, you know, make it so that people don't have to leave and we don't have to do warm handoffs that don't always work out, but have as many services as possible under, you know, the roof of our outreach center.
We brought the data that the HEAL program staff had put together for May of 2020 through May of this year, and I think it really shows that as addiction problems, including overdose, have gone up in the area, that we've been serving a lot of the people. And, you know, we can't know, but probably without this kind of open door that people can come into, some of these numbers might have been a lot worse. I joined Samadhi formally when I didn't get elected a couple of years ago to come back to the legislature. So I said I had, you know, that time available, but I had been talking with David about this idea. And what I see is that the HEAL program is supposed to help us identify gaps in service, and then ideally we turn around and fill those gaps. David has been identifying the gaps by catching people, literally just catching them and then finding out how they ended up getting there, and by a lot of outreach. The county gave contracts to Samadhi to go to drug court and work with agencies. And so we're catching people as they're in the system before they get back out on the street. We were working in the jail, but then COVID and other issues kind of made that not work as well. But still, that's the idea. And I think we have a better grasp of the gaps now, and we have Samadhi filling a lot of them, but not always in ways that are clearly sustainable or that we know how that will continue on. So part of what we also gave you was a budget. It was a working draft that we thought potentially could be American Rescue Plan funding. but the construction at the building site is going on rapidly enough that we're going to have some of this done before those monies become available. So we would like guidance on the timing that we might expect any support, you know, for this, because at present we're drawing from funds that we had hoped to be operating funds in order to do the capital improvements that we have to do, because that's the timing of the owner of the building. And so we'd like help with working through the ARP funding process, and also support for other types of funding that we can turn to, both for some of this capital work and over time for the operational funding issues, expenses.
And I wanted to point out from a sustainability standpoint on the transitional housing or respite housing, as we're calling it, we currently are involved in a grant through the HEAL grant that where we have vouchers to put people in motels for up to 7 days that are considering treatment. I'm told that we use over 90% of those vouchers. I know that was just renewed with Family of Woodstock. We've had a conversation with Family of Woodstock that our respite housing would actually be, you know, one of the main places that we would house people, because it's a lot safer than putting people in motels, because we would have a 24-hour house manager and we have certified recovery care advocates there. So there is a funding stream available for those units, which is good for us to know.
So maybe questions?
Yeah, so I'd like to turn it to members of the committee first to ask some questions.
Yeah, well, the sheet you have here for the renovation, this is the building on Clinton Avenue that you're renovating?
No,
that's the new building. It's 609 Broadway.
Oh, this is the one on Broadway.
Yep.
Now, these renovations are already underway?
Some of them are. Some of them haven't begun yet. We're actually still waiting on final estimates on some of them.
You actually went to my next question, actually, as far as these numbers. I'm just curious where these numbers came from. Specifically, these went out to bid already? You have, an engineer drawing of what you're doing?
And yep.
It all went out to bid?
Yeah, so we had a pro bono architect that came up with our initial plan. We kind of said what we wanted, and then he kind of helped us figure out what we could really do. And so those numbers are based on his figures and you know,
these are real
competitive
numbers.
Yes, those are real numbers.
The context for that is that the owner of the building was renovating the building, and so some of these costs are not what they would be if we were just buying the building and having to do all of it. So
it's
adding on to the work of
the materials are already there. The crew is already there.
Some of these numbers look, honestly, that's what
I thought you might be thinking.
Like, right. I did a lot of begging and negotiating.
Okay. So you'll be renting the building. Is it a long-term lease?
5-year lease.
And what is your philosophy? You know, I had, especially during COVID, some friends I've really been trying to help out, and it seems like a quick hit with medication and then put everybody back out the door, and, you know, we try to find them when their medication isn't working well or something terrible happens. You know, the stabilization center that Legislator Walters and Peter Crystal have been discussing, and Al Bruno's looked into as well. You know, it was something for people in crisis to go to, but it would help move them, you know, beyond just getting medicated or making sure they weren't going to hurt themselves. You know, and it sounds like that's what you're doing, help them actually get into programs and make sure there is follow through. You know, so are you more medically based or therapy based, or is it a little bit of everything? Could you kind of tell us?
Absolutely, yes. So we are peer based, and we do have therapy available, and we have a medical director.
Say what peer based means.
Right. So peer based is, so certified recovery peer advocates are individuals with lived experience of addiction, as I myself do, and basically they go through a training and learn how to be able to use that lived experience. So we kind of meet people you know, we say we meet people where they're at. I mean, it's a very like direct street level kind of meeting where they're at. I mean, a lot of the folks we use that we work with are still actively using. You know, the thing I'm most proud of out of any of this report is that we currently have 323 overdose reversals in 1 year. And that is because we're able to work with people on the street level. We've served over 1,000 people with these certified recovery peer advocates in the past year. And our philosophy is that recovery takes time. It's not, you know, it's not something you do in 24 hours or 48 hours or, you know, it's 28 days really, you know, I mean, basically 28 days is usually that it gets people off the street and puts them and gets them safe from the street. That's really, I mean, generally that's, but I mean, a lot of the folks that we work with, we've been working with for years, right? You know, I mean, you know, sometimes it can take 6 months or 8 months before, you know, it's multiple times, you know, through recovery, going to drug court, coming back, going through jail, and you know, that's why we work very closely with the jail. Also, before the pandemic, we actually had a program in the jail, and you know, so as Kathy was saying, I mean, catching people, you know, in all these different areas. So you know, when we have people that go into treatment, they come out, maybe we get them employment, you know, we find them a place to live, and then 3 months from now they return to use, and they say, oh, I'm no good, I'm, you know. And it's we bring them back in and we say, okay, well, where do you want to start? Like, where what can we look at? And you know, so it's this constant flow. And then what happens eventually, I'd say out of our 11 certified recovery peer advocates, 5 of them are people that we have helped that got to a certain point where we're like, well, you can be part of this now. So it really, what we call it, a recovery community outreach center, it really is a community. So that's kind of the model, you know. Because I mean, I have people now who are active, and they're like, "I want to help. I want to be part of this." And I was like, "You will, you know, not today, but you know."
So there's no deadline, like, you know, 30 days, 28 days, whatever it is. These people can be long term advocates or employees at that.
Yep.
So it kind of keeps itself going because you're generating your own new employees, so to speak.
Right, and you know, it's wonderful. We actually had one of the first contracts we had from the county was a scholarship fund. So we were able to actually give scholarships to 32 local residents to become CERPAs, Certified Recovery Peer Advocates, which pays, I think the starting pay is around $28,000 a year for a certified, and we've placed, I think we've placed 14 people outside of Somati and other, you know, other facilities too, so.
How will this facility tie in with the
crisis?
The old Kingston Hospital, the new outpatient that
urgent
care, yeah.
They've used the urgent care, I believe, and
yeah,
vice versa.
We've gotten
right.
five referrals from them since they opened.
Right.
We have our medical director. We've connected over 300 people to medication assisted treatment through our medical director, but it's a lot for one doctor. So it, you know, in a sense, we're really happy to have, you know, somebody alternatively that we can turn to. And we work very closely with the mobile mental health team. So it's kind of a natural connection for us because some of the people in the mobile mental health team are working at the clinic. So we work very closely with them.
And that's the goal, I think, overall, is to make Broadway sort of a hub in
right.
many ways, right? Between the ambulatory care center, the urgent care, the hopefully the healthy village that will eventually occur. Various different...
You mentioned that a pretty significant number of the folks you work with are homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we have a pretty significant housing crisis, particularly in the very local community around your operation, but also more broadly. I know that folks battling addiction are the focus here, but I noticed that 91% were substance users, 6% were family members, and there's still a few percentage points left there. I'm guessing you're working with some folks that are homeless.
Yeah.
And that's their presenting condition.
Yeah, we will. And they're presenting
mentally ill.
Okay. Yeah. We work with a number of individuals that suffer from severe mental illness, that are homeless, and don't really have any substance use disorder. And that's when we started to really work closely with MHA also, when the ACT team was like, oh, you know where John Smith is? And I said, yeah, he comes in every day.
I tell you, the information here, where 51% of them are coming from the 12401. That's the, so your location couldn't be any better. Like you said, the hub data, 51% come from there, and those numbers actually are kind of surprising.
So yeah, with the new facility being more focused on residential, how is the breakdown of where do folks that battle mental health issues but not substance abuse issues, where do they fit in and also deal with homelessness? Where do they fit into the new program?
You're saying as far as the transitional housing aid?
Yeah, so if, right. You know, I realize that you're serving these folks anyway. Are you intending for the new, on Broadway, the new facility to only focus on substance abuse, or are you going to be working with the population that deals with mental health issues as well?
No, absolutely, mental health issues as well. I mean, 90% of the people we work with have co-occurring disorders,
yeah.
So it's really hard to separate that. And you know, as to you know, what condition is the primary that presents, you know, I mean, that's kind of sometimes hard to decipher at the beginning. So, I mean, initially we saw these residential units as emergency housing, because that's really what, you know, that's kind of what we're seeing the most right now, that we have people that want to go into treatment are, you know, on the street and we lose them, they disappear. But this is also the same with mental health issues.
Right.
People that need, you know, psychiatric care, especially since we have difficulty right now because we have to bring people to Poughkeepsie. You know, it's also a very big issue.
On that topic, are you actually facilitating transportation for folks to go to Poughkeepsie?
Yeah, we've been doing that for about 2 years. Yeah.
So providing, actually, rather than facilitating.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about what that looks like?
Yeah. So I mean, basically, we were doing that out of our staff and our, you know, and our volunteers, and we recently have gotten a contract from Westchester Medical, and we also have a contract with Ellenville. So we actually have peers that are embedded in the emergency departments of those hospitals, and at Turning Point in Poughkeepsie as well. And so the hope, we just got this contract, so the hope now is that we'll have peers embedded in those emergency departments. So when we have somebody that needs to go, we can call and they can come and get them and bring them back. Because what happens quite often, it's not just driving someone to the ED or to the psych ward, it's sitting with them for the 5 or 6 hours that it takes before they get into treatment. Because that's, you know, the gentleman who was, everybody saw that was missing. We actually, a social worker that works with us, that was his brother-in-law. And we just talked about this yesterday, and, you know, it was basically because he was sitting waiting for hours and hours and hours, and he
17.
Just walked out. Yeah.
17 hours.
Yeah.
So, this is going to sound almost, I don't want to say cynical, but I applaud the work that you guys are doing. I can't applaud this enough. However, are we kind of making Westchester Medical's decision not to have those beds easier? By picking,
I hear what you're saying.
Why would they have to?
Yeah,
we're trying to get those beds back here in Ulster County, and we're actually, I know we have to serve the populations that are needed,
right?
And I get that,
right?
But at the same time, I don't want it to be used by Westchester Medical as an excuse to say, you don't need it. Look, you got all these other services that are picking it up.
Yeah,
and no, that's absolutely. What I'm a little worried about.
I absolutely agree with you, Al, and I, you know, I've had numerous meetings with Dr. Doyle at Kingston Hospital, exactly around that point, because it's not convenient and it's not something that we want to do. We're doing it out of necessity because, you know, I mean, it's like with detox, you know, I mean, it's a little known fact, but by law, there are a certain number of beds at Kingston Hospital for detox, and my people are aware of that, and they will stay there and they will fight, because when there's no beds available in Poughkeepsie, which is quite often, we fight and get people into detox, you know, here in Kingston. So it's not, we're not trying to make it easier. We're just, we're
you're
reacting
to
what's
to fill the gaps. And honestly, and I'm going to be point blank, you know, I have a bad taste in my mouth with Westchester Medical,
mm-hmm.
And Dr. Doyle as well.
Mm-hmm.
What happened,
mm-hmm.
With our inpatient beds, and I'm still, I'll say it again, for the life of me, I don't understand why we are partnering up with an entity that already said they don't care. Mm-hmm. And now at the same time, we're kind of bringing them in. It just, I have a hard wrap in my head. You guys have no problem. Matter of fact, like I said, I applaud you.
Right.
But we have to deal with the existing situation.
Well, yeah, but there comes a time where, you know the definition of insanity when you keep doing the same thing over and over and expect mm-hmm. different results. And I think that's where we're at with Western Medical, in my opinion. And that's the only thing, that's the one thing that I get worried about. Mm-hmm.
So if there aren't any more questions from folks on the committee, I'd like to go to our guest legislator, Legislator Walter.
Thank you. I will say, it's not at all the same thing as those beds, but Westchester's going to do whatever they want, no matter what we do. So,
yeah.
I'm just wondering, and I appreciate everything you're doing in our county, and Abe and I visited the new building and got a tour, and the apartments are beautiful, and the space is really great, and it's terrific. Two questions. One is, when you started this project and got the various funding sources, I assumed you knew how much it was going to cost. Are you saying that the cost ended up being more than you thought when you started building, or you just assumed you'd figure out how to fill the gap?
Well, we planned to go in stages so that we would, we would fund things as we could. So starting out with what we needed, the necessity. That's why the transitional housing being nearly finished was definitely something that we were really interested in. But building out some of the other areas, that would take some more time.
So what we saw, you have all the funding for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the
for the bare bones of it.
Yeah.
And then the apartments look pretty.
Well, the apartments, we think the funding stream for that is among the easiest.
Right.
And so that will pay for itself.
That's not in here.
That's not in here.
No, that's not in here.
So
what are the housing units? Isn't that the 7 property apartments?
It is. So this.
But that's for furnishing them, supplies.
Right. So I guess my question is, when you had started this whole project, did you didn't realize how much it was going to cost, and then realize you have a gap to fill? Or you started it knowing it was going to be all the way here, and you're now in the process of trying to, that you always knew you weren't going to have enough money, or did something change since you started?
The latter. I think we know that there, some of the expenses, we were getting figures from the owner of the building and having to adjust them with what our architect was saying the additional cost would be. So there has been, it's still just a few months in formation. But we know we're going to have to get funding streams, and we didn't know that the American Rescue Plan funding would necessarily be there, as we talked about doing something like this 2 years ago. With that money coming available, and with us doing active capital improvements on this building, we're trying to make it match. So we have some funding, which we had hoped was going to be for operations. And so right now we've shifted operational funding for 2022, if you want to think of it that way, into capital, because the building was available and the renovations were going on, and so we were tied to the building owner's time schedule. Now we're also tied because we don't know exactly when the decisions and the money for the ARP will come. And so we're trying to hold off the non-essential construction cost to be able to use capital funding that may become available. But we need to, that's got to come together soon in terms of our knowing the time frames.
I'd like to just say also, Eve, as I mentioned when I first started, that, this, the transitional housing was actually phase 3 of what we were going to do. So when we went out to search for phase 2, when you tell people you're going to open a harm reduction crisis center, they go, oh, great. And we're like, and it's going to be open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they're like, oh, right. So we got a lot of that. And then we found this one building owner, and he said, look, you can have this building, but you have to take the whole building. Mm-hmm. He said, you have to take the residential because I can't, if you have a 24-hour crisis center in the lobby, I can't rent out the apartments. So so it did kind of present itself. And also, the currently we are housing, I'd say, 7 to 8 people a week in the current program. I'm turning away 5 to 6 a week. And that's because, you know, Family Woodstock only works with 4 hotels. So when we run out of rooms, we've been paying for rooms ourselves out of our own private funding. And we've spent, I think, $5,000 since the program started in November. So we can't keep doing that, like, we, you know, because we don't get reimbursed for that. So that was part of it, too. That was just like a need was there and, you know, something was presented.
And those apartments are much nicer than the hotels. So
yeah.
I guess the what would be really nice is to see not just your 725, but of that, what's already being funded. I know Novo's giving you, and you have a few other streams. So what's already being funded of this in other ways? And also, it'd be helpful to know what if any of these aspects, I know that this is the building of it, but I think you suggested that there might be some reimbursables in the development of the transitional house. So it'd just be helpful to know what your bottom line ask is,
mm-hmm.
because you're obviously not needing this whole amount. You're
assuming
saying
that
this
we
is what's
have,
left over yeah. minus the Novo funding and the other funding.
You're assuming that the Novo funding is intended for capital work like this. And
well, I was told that it was.
No.
It was a general grant, but yeah.
Okay. Well,
So if we use it for this, then we don't have it for programming that currently isn't covered.
Well, then I guess it would help to know building costs, first year operational costs, then what percentage of those are refundable
mm-hmm.
or reimbursable, and you know, because some of your contract costs, but those are reimbursable. So, you know, I guess seeing that whole picture, just because. Yeah, and then how long can people stay in the apartments?
So we're starting out with 7 to 14 days, but with them we're talking about the possibility of it being longer. I mean, I'm addressing the direct need that we're facing right now, but longer term is also a direct need. So
that's great.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess I would say that if you're trying to figure out a name, and from my understanding, and I could be wrong, but the respite is going to be tied to a licensure and through the state, a funding stream and a licensure through the state for respite housing, and I don't know if that really matches exactly what you're doing.
The current respite housing is peer based. So
no, I understand. I'm saying the money that there's going to be language that we are all going to be dealing with to identify respite housing for mental health and substance abuse that comes with specific licensure requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are going to be called respite houses by us, because to tie into what the state wants in terms of respite houses and mm-hmm. how the state is licensing for it. So if you want my vote, I'd say go with transitional housing. And I think also because the respite through the state licensure is limited to 7 to 10 days at this point,
mm-hmm.
and that's not what you're looking to do.
We were trying to separate out, and appreciate the help on the language, and we've asked a couple of people, and there apparently is a lot of different languages and a lot of different programs, so we're still sorting that out. But what I think you understand what we want to do, which is basically have something safer and better than
mm-hmm.
the hotels, which are costing the county $80 a night and putting people back in situations where they can't really change their life when they're coming in saying they want to do that. So this is substitute housing, if you would.
Emergency housing.
Emergency housing.
Although it is transitional because you do so much good work to try to find them more secure housing.
Mm-hmm.
So it is sort of, I mean, from what you've told us, you know, you stick them in a hotel and then you're racing against time to figure out a better, more stable situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in many ways, I feel very positive about transitional because you're saying, like, this is, first of all, real housing. It's a real apartment. They're beautiful. And that your motivation is to transition them to something stable,
right.
Something that's reasonable. And I think that's a great thing that you're doing.
So the two concerns, and that was what the language David was using, so maybe I've led him astray here, but the two concerns I had with that is, one, I thought there might be some license or requirements that came with transitional housing, because some of that, I think, does have service provisions that it, people think of it as then part of a licensed, accredited program. And the other is this idea of a stabilization center, is that is time limited to 23 hours. And I wanted to distinguish this from that.
Yeah, yeah, and this is not a stabilization center. I mean, it's a very important thing, and what you're doing is terrific, and it'll go very well with a stabilization center. But
you think transitional...
I mean, I don't know about licensure expectations for transitional housing.
If you're trying to replace hotels, motels, I think we should stick with emergency housing, which is what DSS places people in.
Right.
So as you're working with Commissioner Iaposi, if the goal is to place DSS recipients into these that meet your criteria, it would be, you know, emergency housing that would substitute motels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's also ESHI, you know, other emergency support housing units that are longer term, they're permanent housing,
mm-hmm.
that certain, you know, mental health and substance abuse and chronic homelessness would qualify for funding for some of the supports. That would be another way to go, but that's more permanent.
Right. Right, and that's something we'd like to look at in the future too. So, yeah.
I think we have one last question.
Just a quick one, and I'm going to be asking this of all our service providers. You know, obviously, you've got operating costs, and you have contractual and other programs where you will be reimbursed for your services. Do you have any billable services as far as peer to peer when medical comes along?
Yes. By the middle of 2022, all of our certified recovery peer advocates will be billable through OASIS. We actually had a meeting with them 2 months ago, and that it was supposed to already be in place. It's not in place yet. So that's one stream. Another stream is that we actually train people to become certified recovery peer advocates. I've trained 73 people in Ulster County so far. Since COVID and since Zoom, that actually has become a much larger enterprise, because now we can train people from, you know, all over the country. If, you know, so that's another revenue stream that we're looking at as well.
Yeah, I think the more that could get laid out,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's already covered, what's reimbursable, it would help.
The bottom line that the bottom line of what has to be made up at the end of the day.
Right, so we need to know
out of pocket, where are we at?
Okay.
Thank you guys so much for being here. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome to hang out for these lovely resolutions. But you wouldn't be faulted at all for
leaving. I'm going to try to get myself hired for that first.
Yes, right, exactly. You should leave while you still can. But
thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
It's a pastor.
All right, so we're going to move on with our agenda of resolutions today. We've got resolution number 294, creating two full-time positions within Department of Social Services and amending the 2021 Ulster County budget, coming from the Department of Social Services. Do I have a motion to discuss?
I'll make that motion.
I will second.
Thank you. We're in discussion. Any discussion?
I do have a question. I was concerned because we're creating more positions. And I wanted to ensure, first of all, if these are grant-related, that there is a sunset clause.
I think this is restoring positions that we cut out.
Do you want me to just quickly?
Yeah, please, Mark, if you want to go for it, please.
So, in the 2021 budget for the Department of Social Services, we defunded but did not eliminate upwards of, it's roughly 40 positions, working with the department on what they needed, with the understanding that once we get 6 months through the year, if workload and other things seem to mean that we needed to put some of these positions back, we would come to you all and advocate to do so. So the two positions that we're looking at now, and these are the only two that DSS are asking to restore in 2021, is an early intervention specialist. It has to do with you know, with workload. Because school was closed in 2020 and the early part of 2021, this position wasn't necessarily needed, but it's picked back up again. And they feel like workload, they need it. The other is a typist in the legal division. And right now, I mean, this person is a typist, but an administrative aide. They answer the phones, they do that kind of work. Right now, attorneys are answering the phones and doing stuff where they should really be doing attorney work.
So these were positions that we had.
Like, we had them prior
had them
to 2020.
We had back off on them because we had to find $35 million in the budget somewhere.
Exactly.
So we cut back on it, but now that we were whole again,
we're looking at restoring, and we're looking at restoring 2%.
And the money is coming from?
I mean, I think that these two yeah. come for yeah. the entire 6 months come with a $6,000 county cost. But, because it's mostly state and federal government, or state and federal. But these will, like, this money would come out of, I believe, fund balance.
Yeah, that's what it appears to.
It was like 6,700, if I remember.
It's,
yeah. I mean, it looks like you're, you know, we've got 6,054 in terms of the request to decrease the fund balance, and I guess the pretty significant delta between the amount that we're decreasing the fund balance and the amount that's listed in the increase section is from those
state
and federal reimbursements.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions?
Nope.
All in favor?
Aye.
I'll be in favor so it passes, but
I
told myself that I didn't want to do any more.
Just for the record, with the quorum, anything that's not three doesn't pass.
Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was
yeah.
just
no,
the majority
he's right.
of people here.
That
okay.
is. Majority of your total committee, which
oh, majority
is five,
of the total
so
committee.
Three.
Okay.
Tell everybody you twisted my arm.
I'm not telling. No, we're not.
Oh,
kidding.
No
one's twisting your arm.
I'm in favor because I think we're making them whole again.
Oh, I mean, I've been concerned because we, you know, we had 125
yes,
people willing to retire, so we wouldn't have a budget issue because we had no idea how we were going to get hit. We had no idea that all the, you know, everybody who stayed home got a honeydew list and ended up, you know, punching up our sales taxes through, you know, Home Depot and the restaurants. But I still worry about these, you know, mid budget increases and putting money, especially if we're taking it out of the fund balance.
Yes. I'll just say we're doing it as little as we possibly can.
Yeah.
I mean, we are telling departments that when possible, we need to hold the line for this budget year.
Right. Well, and I very much appreciate the utilization of staff such that attorneys making six figures are not answering telephones. Not that they're you know, any more valuable than anybody else, but I want the taxpayer money used well.
And I mean, I would like to look at social services. I think we need a lot more boots on the ground. I think that would really help what's going on. I think it would help, you know, not just the mental health issues and you know, making sure the kids are being taken care of, to have real, you know, caseworkers go in and you know, work with families on one-on-one, you know, but also for any fraud too.
Yeah. Honestly, if I may, Laura, I agree with you completely. However, you still need to support staff for those caseworkers. You still need to support, because those caseworkers are useless and you don't have people backing them up. That's just my opinion. I mean, I agree with you, but I think, you know, when you do something like that, there's an infrastructure that has to go. Just like when you build out a building, it's going to take more electric, it's going to take more plumbing. You still have to do it. You want to increase the mental health services like that, you got to have the back support to do it as well.
But I mean, remember, social services wasn't created to be a way of life.
No, not originally it wasn't,
yeah.
But welcome
and,
to New York.
And, you know, it was created where they did have the one-on-one and social workers did go out to the families, and it's just turned into this real hamster wheel of, you know, and people are getting stuck. I mean, if you really wanted to go out and work, why would you, you know, go get a job for $10 an hour when, you know, like when you're going to lose 20 in services?
All right, so I'm going to call orders of the day and get us back into business.
Yeah,
business.
Yes.
Resolution 2.
All in favor?
Laura, you voted in the affirmative?
I did, yes.
Great,
so
yeah.
All good. Yes, I may still take a couple.
Well, it could hit the floor.
You thank
could,
you, sir.
You know, we get the vote on this again.
Yeah, you'll get a chance. Yeah, we can always talk about that in caucus as well, Laura.
Thank you.
Resolution 295, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $27,500, causing the aggregate contract plus the amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the county, Anderson Medical PC DBA Emergency One Urgent Care and Diagnostic Center Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion?
No second.
Thank you. We're in discussion. Any comments or questions?
An alcohol screening for clients. This is basically family court mandated.
Yeah, we don't have a choice.
We don't do this for. Yeah. We don't require this for benefits or anything.
Looks like it's about 2/3 pass through.
Yeah.
And there is something in the contract as well that urgent care builds their insurance first, and then we're the gap?
I believe so.
Okay. I'm going to be asking for that, I think, with all our future contracts. I want to make sure
where we can
that
legally. I mean, I have to, this is a mandated, I have to make sure that we're able to do that.
And I was in family court 30 years ago, but when we had to go through psych evals and we had to go in for screening, or even DNA testing, we were mandated to pay, so, or bring our insurance.
I
don't know if they still do it.
I just want to make a quick comment, and not about that, but going back to your last comment on the last resolution as far as, you know, mid-budget stream, I think that argument right now, we're out of COVID in the middle of the budget, so finances change in the middle of the budget.
So the world's waking up.
So the whole world's waking up. So I mean, just like the DA's office, you know, that was mid-budget too.
Yeah.
But it's something we needed to do, so that's my argument on that.
Any other questions?
No.
Anything else, Deputy Executive? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 296, approving the execution of a contract for $56,650 entered into by the county. Jennifer Heavey, LMSW, Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion for discussion?
I'll make that motion by now.
Thank you. You're my without you, we would not be anywhere. With your motion and your second, so I don't know what we do.
Can he make, Nettie, is he allowed to make a motion?
Of course.
Sure, he can.
Of course.
If you didn't get a second to get it on the floor.
Yeah. So, all right, we're in discussion. Any questions, comments, comments from Deputy Executive Ryder?
She works with Child Protective Services, provides behavioral health clinicals.
Thank you, sir.
And it looks like this is 100% state funded.
Correct.
Those are good ones, yeah.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Laura?
Oh, yes.
We do care about the state funding, too, though.
The best is federal. They just printed. Resolution 297, amending the 2021 Ulster County budget to accept the Healing Communities Study funding, Department of Health.
I'll make a motion for discussion.
I'll second.
All right, we're in discussion. Any questions?
Did we just amend their budget, or did we accept to?
We are accepting Healing.
I could have sworn we did that last month. Deputy Executive Ryder?
This is year three. I think we amended a portion for year two. This is the last year. This is basically the last year of funding for Healing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. $0 net.
No, it's in all of the 2040, and it's in the new initiative to spend the AR.
This is the last year that there will be Columbia funding for HEAL. I mean, I think it'll be up to the legislature and others on whether we continue to fund those. I mean, I think they're vital positions, but the HEAL study will be over.
Yeah, we don't need to study it anymore.
We need to move from study to do.
Any other questions?
No.
All right. All in favor?
Are there any other questions?
No, not. Al asked a lot of questions too. Okay.
I did.
We're inquisitive.
Resolution 298, amending the 2021 Ulster County budget to accept increased funding from New York State Office of Addiction Services and Supports for a cost of living adjustment, Department of Mental Health.
You want to
make that?
You make the motion. I'll second
it.
I move that we discuss this.
I'll second it.
All right, we're in discussion.
$6,000 in cost of living.
For each line or for a single?
Total $6,000.
Total $6,000.
I think it's
about how many employees?
Digging in deeper than I.
we are accepting money from the state.
We don't need to dig so deep. I'm just curious.
A 1% increase.
Because these cost of, I mean, this
these
is...
These come up a lot, but we've almost passed these once a month.
They come up a lot, and they have a trickle-up and a trickle-down effect on everybody else. So you get folks, you get you know, a new contract that justifiably actually deserves a cost of living increase, well, then you've got all the management staff that, you know, certainly deserve a cost of living. So these trickle out. That's why I like to ask these questions.
Right. We don't have a lot of say in what the actual changes are beyond just, you know, Office of Mental Health. And these are mostly, I think, for contracts, not for employees.
So
these are just increased amounts that they will be incurred.
Great. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Great. And that is our last resolution. Does anyone have any new business? Under old business, we have ARP funding. Is that something specific or?
No, that was, you know.
We'll have much say in that, really.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way.
I just kept it there because, you know, it's still
all right
in the mix.
I'll make a motion with adjourn.
I'll second that.
Oh.
All right.
All in favor?
You get a vote?
No. Stick.